Hey, Betties. Welcome to the Better Podcast. It's your host, Dr. Stephanie. It is geeky magic time where I step away from the interviews and just talk to you. It's just going to be me and you today. And these episodes, I'm going to bring you personal insights, frequently asked questions, topic du jour in a more condensed, quick, and actionable way. I go hard on the geek, wrap it up with sprinkles and magic for you to do and be better. Okay, Betties, I wanted to have a conversation today around inflammation and where we can begin to start eliminating some of the sources of inflammation in the diet specifically. One of my goals this year is to make it my best year ever with my skin. And one of the ways that I'm doing that is with the Boncharge Red Light Neck and Chest Mask. Wrinkles, acne, scarring, skin roughness, loss of collagen and elastin happen in the face and in the neck and the décolletage area on our chest where the skin is very thin and susceptible to skin damage. I think at this point we're all pretty good about putting sunscreen on our face, but so many of us miss the neck and the chest area too. I use the Boncharge neck and chest mask daily for about 10 minutes in the morning while I'm checking emails. Their red and near infrared light waves together penetrate up to 5 to 10 centimeters below the skin surface. The red light reaches the skin's top layers, and the NIR light targets the deeper tissues without UV exposure. And that's going to help reduce the fine lines, wrinkles, and to help ramp up collagen and elastin production. So I want you to head over and have your best skin with me this year. Go to boncharge.com/better. That's BETTER. And use the discount code BETTER at checkout. And that's going to give you 15% off your entire cart. Transform your health and fitness with the Carol Bike, the smartest, most effective exercise backed by science. You can experience unparalleled results in just a minimum of 15 minutes per week. per week, thanks to AI personalized workouts tailored to your age and your fitness level. You will increase fat loss, train up your strength and your speed, and have better energy, something that every woman, including myself, absolutely covets. I always say that women are the original biohackers. If there's a way for us to feel better and look better, we are all over it. Carol Bike, in my opinion, is one of the best pieces of cardio equipment that you can invest in. Studies prove that Carol helps you achieve a 12% increase in cardio fitness, lowers the risk of type 2 diabetes by 62%, and reduces blood pressure by 5% in as little as 8 weeks. Begin your transformation with the Carol Bike today and enjoy $100 off using the promo code BETTER for our beautiful Better Podcast listeners. That's BETTER. All you have to do is visit carolbike.com.
So you've heard me talk about inflammation before, and I usually will use the word inflammation interchangeably with stress. So stress and inflammation are, I will use stress. What I'm talking about is the same thing. And essentially, I am talking about three different verticals or three different silos. And today we're going to focus on one of those silos. So when we talk about stress and inflammation, I will usually look at it from a physical aspect. So there may be some physical stressors, both acute or chronic, of inflammation, chemical stressors, which we're going to focus on today, and then emotional or neuro-spiritual stressors. So just as a brief review, when we think about stress in the physical realm, an acute physical stressor or acute source of inflammation might be something like falling off a ladder or falling down or hurting yourself at the gym or, you know, lifting the weights in a funny way. That might be an acute form of inflammation. A chronic form of inflammation, when we're thinking about it in the physical vertical, might be sitting for too long, not getting enough generalized movement through the day, or sleeping in a position that is causing compensatory mechanics, or even just having a gait or a walking, the way that you walk is changing to compensate for asymmetries either across the spine, muscular symmetry, postural realm, et cetera. So just to kind of give you an understanding of where I'm talking about in terms of physical stressors, what we're going to talk about today is going to be chemical stressors. So I'm going to talk about this in the context of chronic stressors. So when we think about chemical sources of inflammation, again, you can subcategorize them both as acute and chronic. And you can have acute chemical stressors like medications that you take for, you know, a certain ailment that can also become a chronic stressor if you are required to take that medication over time. And then we are also, of course, a chemical stressor that is chronic that I want to talk about today is in the diet. So we're going to talk about some, the inflammatory model of illness and then some of the underlying drivers of inflammation. And then the other one that we won't get to today, but I just wanted to mention it for thoroughness, is the emotional or the neurospiritual. And this might be acute, again, acute or chronic. Acute might be, you know, the sudden death of a loved one, a divorce, and that might be chronic. And then it leads up to this acute event, which is divorce. It could be a job that is sucking your soul. It could be, you know, ailing parents that are really requiring a lot of energetic or emotional energy from you. So I wanted to start off with the chemical vertical because I think that it's a little bit easier to understand. And it's in some ways, it's easier to begin to change because we can start changing these things in our diet immediately. The physical, acute, and chronic need a little bit of time. We need to love our bodies a little bit and give our bodies a bit of a runway for healing, especially if we have compensatory mechanics and biomechanics that have been going on for many years, many decades, which is often the case. And then again, the emotional vertical, again, you can understand how that can be something that will take a while to unravel. So I wanted to start with some quick or something that is a little bit easier for you to change to start making and creating some momentum in your life. And I wanted to talk about specifically wheat and dairy today. So when we think about reducing inflammation, this should actually be a tenet in any nutrition protocol. The tenet should be we need to reduce inflammation, in particular if the individual is eating a more modern North American diet. The acronym is often the Standard American Diet, abbreviated as SAD, and aptly so because it is often full of processed foods, trans fats, lots of wheat, lots of dairy. And of course, inflammation or stress in this chemical vertical is going to affect everything, right? It can affect your digestion, your ability to absorb nutrients. It can affect your ability to elimination and having regular bowel movements. It can contribute to weight gain. It can activate inflammatory pathways. It can lead to mitochondrial dysfunction. Like it can literally lead to anything and everything in the body if the stressor is present for long enough. And as I mentioned before, if we accept an inflammatory model of illness, and when I say that, when we think about chronic lifestyle diseases, when we think about cardiovascular disease, when we think about type 2 diabetes, when we think about Alzheimer's, these are all models of illness that have their linchpin. The lynch here is the inflammation at the core. We must start to look at some of these underlying drivers of inflammation. So when we think about wheat and dairy specifically, these are critical triggers to consider. These are immune activating inflammatory proteins that most people have a hard time digesting. And when we think about wheat, it is one of the most highly processed foods in our diet. It is almost exclusively rendered as a high glycemic flour. It is prepared with sugar, often with genetically modified, it has lots of GMOs in it, genetically modified vegetable oils, which are often rancid and oxidized. And then of course, dairy is homogenized and pasteurized, creating essentially a dead liquid. It's like a high sugar, dead liquid with distorted fats, denatured proteins, and almost completely unabsorbable through and thoroughly, you know, destroyed vitamins. And I don't mean to gross you out, but I do think that's important to give you information so that you can make better decisions for yourself and your family. But it is odd that the human species, we are the only species that consumes another mammal's milk. So you don't see in nature, you don't see squirrels drinking raccoon milk. You don't see cows drinking goat milk or sheep, suckling at a goat. So we are the only species to really consume another species' milk. So even if you just let that sink in a little bit, it is a little bit odd. But then of course, the industrialization of dairy is what happens is we hook these cows these lactating cows up to these machines, and it will continue to milk the cow, whether or not, you know, it doesn't really give her a break. So any mothers that are listening here know that when your baby was going through a growth spurt and you were breastfeeding that baby, your boobs were sore. Like they were, and you know, in my case, you know, for at least in the beginning, they were cracked and they were bleeding and it was really, really painful. But for these cows, unfortunately, they are milked through the bleeding, through the pus, through all the things, through the crusting that happens. And I know that that's a little bit nasty to say, but it's important to know that this is actually happening. And this is actually why they need to, this is why they need to pasteurize the milk. They need to boil that shit so that it gets so hot that they kill off the bacteria, they kill off the blood, they kill off the pus that's in the milk. And then you'll see often things like fortified with vitamin D, fortified with vitamin whatever, because they have distorted and thoroughly destroyed these vitamins. So they have to add them back in through the boiling process. So I want to think about, and I want to give you a little bit of background in terms of what we can expect with gluten and dairy, and then how we can begin to eliminate those. I want to give you some action items as well in terms of what you can do in your own life as well. So first thing to note is that the molecular similarity between gluten and casein actually makes them co-conspirators. So, and we especially see this with autoimmune, ladies with autoimmune conditions. So we know the gluten, the protein in gluten is called gliadin. And when we look at the molecular structure of gliadin, it actually looks like the thyroid. So it has a similar structure to the thyroid as well as the cerebellum. So whenever you have, if you are someone who or know someone with Hashimoto's thyroiditis, often nicknamed Hashis or Hashimoto's, you know that eating gluten can be a trigger for a flare-up because often this woman has hyperpermeability in the gut. So when she consumes wheat, which has gluten in it, and the protein there is gliadin, that will pass through the gut barrier, make its way into the bloodstream. The immune system says, oh my God, here's some gliadin. It is foreign. It is not part of us. We have to attack it and get rid of it. And then sometimes the immune system will also mess up and say, and look at the thyroid and be like, oh my God, look, there's more of the gliadin because it is because of the molecular similarity that it has, the thyroid has to this gluten. And the same is true for our cerebellum. And this is actually why we see Hashimoto's. They will, when they're in a flare up, they will complain of brain fog. They will complain of mood changes. Sometimes they will also have motor changes as well. The cerebellum is very much involved in coordinating the motor responses that we have and cleaning it all up. So when we look, and of course, when we talk about this in the context of mood disorders, we actually see that in patients with casein antibodies, so casein is the protein that is found in dairy, so patients who have casein antibodies, 7 to 8x increase in the diagnosis of schizophrenia, and they have demonstrated a 3 to 5 increased risk of bipolar disorder. Okay, so when we think about cow's milk, there is usually 6 types of protein in cow's milk. So there's 4 casein, which is comprised of about 80% of the proteins, and then 2 whey. And then within the casein category, we have A1 beta casein, which is most commonly present in Holstein cows, which are the cows that they're like American cows where we typically get our dairy from. And that's actually thought to represent a mutated form of the protein. It's not that, you know, it is a genetically modified form of that protein. And I read in preparation for today's Geeky Magic that it's only about 5,000 years old. So very, very important to note that casein, when we see patients with casein antibodies, you are also now at an increased risk for some of these mental disorders like schizophrenia, like bipolar disorder as well.
I am incredibly bullish on sauna as a therapy for recovery, heart health, and overall aging well. I personally decided on an infrared sauna from Sunlighten because of the range of far wavelengths and near infrared wavelengths that it offers. Saunas help with detoxification and rejuvenation to rid your body of toxins. It helps with heart health by improving circulation, reducing blood pressure, and helping keep the arteries supple. It helps with muscle recovery by easing the tension and soreness to recover faster, and of course, stress reduction with the warmth and the relaxation of sitting in a sauna. sauna. It's crucial for hormonal balance and achieving a state of well-being necessary for a strong physique and a strong mind. If you visit sunlighten.com/better and use code better to get a discount. That is sunlighten, sunlighten.com/better, and use code better at checkout.
And of course, as I mentioned, they there is a genetic, because the there's a molecular similarity between gluten and casein, as I mentioned, this makes them co-conspirators. So we have to be eliminating both the dairy and the wheat from the diet to see if your symptoms improve. And of course, one of the things that people don't realize is beyond the direct, you know, the direct brain stimulation and poor digestion with local inflammation that cow dairy has, it can also be a source of blocking or creating rather folate antibodies. So when we think about folate, women who are thinking of getting pregnant, this is of great concern, right? Because we know that folate is very important for the nervous system development, especially early on, usually before you even know that you're pregnant. This is why we recommend for pregnant women to be supplementing preconception with adequate amounts of folate. Because we will see things like neural tube defects. I would see in practice, I would see something called spina bifida, which is the incomplete forming of the spine around the spinal cord. So you could have different degrees of that. But if you have folate antibodies, your body is now attacking folate. So you can understand how that might gum up the receptors that are responsible for transporting this really critical nutrient to the brain and the nervous system, not only for, you know, a mother who is thinking of conceiving or becoming or a future mother becoming pregnant, but just for any woman, any man who values their methylation, because folate is an important part of that. So when we think about going gluten-free and dairy-free, this is going to eliminate all processed foods. And I'll give you a list in a second of things that like sneaky sources of gluten and sneaky sources of dairy. But generally for dairy, we want to include all milk-based foods on all products. So like things like yogurts, cheese, ice cream. I know, don't hate me, but that's what you got to do. And then for gluten, actually, I'll just give you the list right now. Here's like some popular foods that contain gluten. We got breads, of course, pastas, cakes, cookies, muffins, like your usual suspects. Beer is a source of gluten. Breakfast cereals, couscous, farina, if you're Italian, semolina, spelt. Flour, like usually flour is a source of gluten, of course. That's how we get the beautiful breads and stuff when we're baking. Hydrolyzed vegetable protein, sprouted wheat, rye, barley, spelt. Kamut, wheat. So bran, durum, germ, gluten, malt, sprouts, starch, all that stuff, and batter fried foods, snacks such as potato chips, rice cakes, crackers. And I'm getting rid of all your good stuff, right? Salad dressings are also a source of gluten. They can be. So you always just make your own olive oil and vinegar for the win, always and forever. Ketchup, soy sauce, marinara sauce, processed meats, imitation crab meat, ice cream and candy, vegetable gum, and then you can also actually find gluten in beauty products. So lipstick, lip gloss, lip balm, drugs can also contain gluten as well. So when we are thinking about eliminating these things, so like kind of best practices, first is to actually start journaling how you feel, right? So I want you to be, whenever you consume, if you're not quite ready to eliminate, you're like, okay, listen, I don't want to do this, but I do want to see if she has a point. So what I would like you to do is keep a bit of a food journal. And any time that you consume either dairy or wheat, I want you to, in the next 5 to 7 days, and this is important, it's not necessarily immediate, although it can be, but sometimes when we have an intolerance or a sensitivity to dairy and wheat, you can see symptoms up to 5 to 7 days later. And often it's that, like at 7 days, like that's a week later, you may not necessarily chronologically link the inflammation or the symptom that you're experiencing now to the cheese sandwich that you had a week ago. So it's important for you to be tracking both what you eat, like the date and the time, and then when you actually experience the symptom. So the symptom can be immediate, and that's actually pretty easy to link, but sometimes it's not. And that's what can make it a little tricky for some people. So Couple things to look out for in terms of symptom presentation: bloating. Okay. So the feeling of your stomach feeling swollen, full of gas after you've eaten, or again, you can feel that several days later. Digestion issues. We mentioned gas, bowel movement changes. So this can actually oscillate depending on the person, from constipation, meaning that you are not having a regular bowel movement daily, and a regular bowel movement, or I should say a normal bowel movement, is somewhere between 1 and 3 times daily. So at least one a day, but it can be more than that. And then all the way to the other spectrum where there's diarrhea, where your stools are quite loose, quite watery. You might see that they're kind of mucousy as well. So any of these symptoms after you consume wheat or dairy. Another symptom that you might experience is stomach pain. So much like bloating, right? It is one of the most common complaints that I hear from patients, where they have sort of this like sharp pain in their stomach. Now, headaches and brain fog. Here's another one that I want to just say that this often doesn't happen right away. It often doesn't happen right after you have the cheese sandwich or the ice cream or whatever. This often happens several days later. So that might be, migraines. It might feel like a tension type headache. You might feel pressure in the head. Brain fog just means like things sort of kind of feel foggy. Like you have the words in your brain, but they can't quite get to your mouth. Everything seems a bit hazy. Skin issues are another really big sign or symptom that there's something going on in the gut. And I just recorded a really wonderful podcast with Jennifer Fugo, and we talk about eczema, we talk about psoriasis, we talk about rosacea, we talk about all of those things where we see skin rashes and how those relate to gut, and that's actually coming out soon. But things like dry, itchy skin, the eczema, like I mentioned, the psoriasis, acne, all can be signs that you may be reacting to the gluten. Anxiety and depression. So I mentioned bipolar disorder and schizophrenia, which I started off with intentionally because I wanted to really highlight that this is not just like, oh, I'm just doing like a little elimination diet and this is just going to be a little fun experiment. Like it has consequences to your brain health. Anxiety and depression, we know, happen in women orders of magnitudes more than they do in the male population. And that's not to say that it doesn't happen with our men. Of course it does. But it is really important for a woman who is experiencing anxiety and depression for her to maybe consider, especially if she's on a medication for the anxiety or the medication for depression, that it may actually be something that she can improve or ameliorate through her diet. And that's not often spoken about. If you are going to your medical doctor or your psychiatrist to refill your prescription, they're not saying, you know, how's your gluten? You know, like they often don't have that conversation in terms of how diet can influence your mood and your state. So, and the other big one there is like that I haven't mentioned is nutrient deficiencies, right? So like your B12, your folate status, if you are now consuming gluten and you have hyperpermeability in the gut, and then you are creating folate antibodies, your methylation is going to be poor. Your clearance of toxins are going to be poor. Mood's going to be poor. An unhappy gut, of course, can lead to a substantial change in mood. Most of our serotonin is created in the gut. And of course, we know the gut-brain connection is very real. So if your gut is unhappy, you have hyperpermeability, you have bugs that are overgrowing there that shouldn't be there. You just have general gut dysbiosis. This is going to lead to a substantial change in your mood. And the last thing I'll ask you to look out for is joint pain. So musculoskeletal issues. I would see this all the time in practice, where we would have achy knees, achy necks, headaches, low back pain. And of course, the chiropractic adjustment is absolutely wonderful for relieving that pain. But when you continue to keep the stimulus in the lifestyle, right? When you continue to bombard the neuromusculoskeletal system with gluten or dairy, and you have a problem processing that, that is going to create changes in the pressure, in the pressure of the joint. It is going to, it's going to activate inflammatory pathways that are going to cause the joint to swell. The glide of the bones in skin, like the cartilage is going to deteriorate, and then the glide. So you normally when you have full range of motion, full pain-free range of motion, it's because your bones can actually glide beautifully across each other. And that is inhibited when you are consuming lots of dairy and lots of gluten. So what can we do? Elimination diet, I've sort of been alluding to this as we've been talking about. So a minimum amount of time for you to eliminate is a month. I have often found that the sweet spot is more like 2 months. So for 1 month, this is enough time for us to bring down the inflammation. And then I like to actually do it for another month to allow for healing to start happening. So journal, you're going to be journaling your when you are eating the dairy and the wheat, how you're feeling and when you feel those things, so those symptoms that I listed off, and how long after. And then after you do that, it might be also time for you to reach out and do some food sensitivity testing with your functional medicine practitioner, your chiropractor, your naturopath, or someone who is really involved in holistic health. So no gluten, no dairy, minimum 1 month. About 2 months is probably where I'd like you to do it. I would love for you to try this and let me know how this works for you. You will find that you are probably going to sleep better. Your headaches are going to decrease in their frequency and their severity and their duration if you are a headache sufferer. You're probably going to lose weight because when you are in a pro-inflammatory state, it is very hard to lose weight. And you're just going to feel better, which is kind of the point, Betty. I want you to feel good. So try this and let me know how it works for you. You can either leave me a review, you can come to our Facebook community and let me know if this experiment worked for you.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. For those of you who want to continue on this week's Geeky Magic Carpet Ride with me, visit bettershow.co/show notes. You'll find research, links, summary notes, musings that I prepared in preparation for the podcast, and I often throw in some of my best practices, bonuses, and links. All the juicy bits are in there for you. And now for the obligatory legal and medical disclaimer. This podcast is for general information only, and the advice, recommendations we discuss do not replace medicine, chiropractic, or any other primary healthcare provider's advice, treatment, or care. In the consumption of this podcast, there is no doctor-patient relationship formed. And the use and implementation of the information discussed are at the sole discretion of the listener. The information and opinions shared on this podcast are not intended to be a substitute for primary care, diagnosis, or treatment. This episode is brought to you by yours truly, Dr. Stephanie Estima, and Leverage. Leverage handles all production, creates the images that you see on my social media, and takes out all my awkward pauses. They are my secret magic bullet. You can visit them at getleverage.com/better.